An Expiation by Arabella Keneally. Only in exceptional cases do I trouble to put the law on the track of murder, though in the course of their activities on my behalf, my agents witness the commission of such a crime. For my part, I prefer the delinquent to escape, that I may find, as I do find, the penalty closing in on him as an indirect consequence of his action, rather than that it shall take the clumsy form we dignify by the title of justice. Far crueler, subtler, and a hundredfold more fitting to a particular crime are the methods whereby time, character, and circumstance enmesh the criminal. Expedient it may be to rid ourselves of the confessedly vicious, but the powers which are moulding us to ends our finite minds have so far failed to grasp are neither assisted in their ultimate objects nor appeased in their far-reaching wrath, so to put it, by our crude expedients. The long arm of development which encompasses the human family and places effect in the unerring train of cause will find the murderer, many years it may be after we have done with him, but find him it will, as inevitably as the impulse given to pool by pebble laps the shore. How can it reach him after death, you ask? Death is but change of identity. Entities in the school of evolution pass through myriad lives in training for eternity, and the ill acts of one existence may not find expiation until a later one. A theory, you say? A theory, I admit, but I ask you for another which shall equally explain the inexplicabilities of human life. I have a story illustrative of my theory. Read into it any other interpretation what you will, and judge if it apply as mine does. In a cottage on one of my estates, a gamekeeper lived, some 10 years since, with his young and pretty wife. He was middle-aged and morose, considering, as does many another, that the cardinal virtue he practiced, in his case that of honesty, absolved him from the obligation of practicing any of the minor amenities and amiabilities of life. Nobody could imagine by what sorcery or fortuitous concomitance of accidents he had persuaded pretty Polly Penrose to mate with him. He had saved a certain sum of money, for to the other unlovable qualities he added that of screw. Polly had swains better circumstance than he, however, so that this offered no solution of the problem. The village wondered, chattered, and finally decided that
"You could never calculate on what girls do, for they're chock full of whimsies."
And so they let the matter drop. Cooper was but one of Polly's whimsies. It is probable I should never have concerned myself with Polly's affairs had I not one day come upon her crying her eyes out in a wood. On seeing me, she blushed and stole away. Matters just then were dull. I had no other case on hand, and, without anticipating much result, idly determined to trace the cause of Polly's tears. I had among my agents a girl of about her age and temperament, who soon made Polly's acquaintance. It came out then that Polly had married for pique. There was a certain stalwart sweetheart of hers, another of my keepers, of whom she was fond, but he, rousing her jealousy in a fit of temper, she accepted Cooper. To make a long story short, for this is but a preface, Polly and her lover made it up again too late, for Polly was then Mrs. Cooper. Polly was a good girl, and I do not believe Cooper had any substantial reason for complaint, as she saw Dell but rarely. But she grew pallid and depressed. Occasionally, she was seen with Dell. The circumstances reaching Cooper's ears, with doubtless some embellishment, there was trouble in the cottage. Cooper even went so far as to strike her. In her fear and agitation, the poor girl was soon to be a mother, she fled to Dell. Cooper, following, found her in a shed near the latter's cottage. From words, the men passed to blows, and eventually Dell struck Cooper over the